This is Alpha Geek Radio. Visit tunein.alphageekradio.com to learn more.
The following is a presentation of GalacticNetcasts.com.
Attention, Galactic Collective. The Sci-Fi Geeks Club is next. Please stand by.
You can take part in the podcasts by providing feedback. Send a message to galacticnetcasts@gmail.com. Call the voicemail number at 805-328-3966 or leave an audio message directly on our website, galacticnetcasts.com. We also invite you to join the Galactic Collective. All the information and links can be found at gncasts.com/galacticcollective. That's gncasts.com/galacticcollective. Now, without further ado, hear ye, hear ye! Another meeting of the Sci-Fi Geeks Club is officially called to order!
Hello and welcome to another production of Galactic Netcasts. I'm Dave Nelson. Joining me on the host panel this week is my old friend of 50 years, Mr. Brad Ludwig. Hi, Brad.
It's been a lifetime, sir.
And Mr. Corey Scott. Hey, Corey.
How do?
What's up in your world? Hey, you got a brand new, you're now officially full-time part of the Galactic Netcast family, right?
Yes, I am co-hosting Podcast of Terror with Matt Stein.
Yes.
He says hi, Dad.
Hang on. We can't just do that. He's here all the time.
Bye, Dad.
Always in spirit.
Yes. So you're the other person on Podcast of Terror, and
I'm one of the other people.
Yeah. And Podcast of Terror covers what?
Horror related news, horror movies. So far we've done some review stuff. We're going to try to do some more news and break into maybe a little bit more stuff. I know Matt has been talking about maybe reviewing some haunted houses this season.
Yeah.
So that should be a lot of fun, and I'll do whatever you can send me off to do.
Yeah, 'tis the season coming up. Halloween is just around the corner.
We just want to make people pee their pants.
Yeah, that's the goal. And you can find Podcast of Terror by going to gncasts.com, the newly redesigned gncast.com. It looks pretty good if I don't say so myself, but I did say
it
so myself.
Does.
Thanks, Brad.
I like it.
All right, hey, we have a guest this week. How about that? Our guest this week is the guy behind the Twitter account at Fantasy Sci. So welcome to the Sci-Fi Geeks Club podcast, the Sci-Fi Guy. Hi, Sci-Fi Guy.
Hi, and thank you very much. I'm quite enjoying this so far. I'll tell you that when I first got the invite and went over and checked out your website, I was so impressed with the information you guys have. So I'm happy to be here. Thank you very much. And I get to meet a couple of new people. I get to meet Brad and Corey.
Yeah. The internet is an amazing thing. You know, I've met more people via the internet, I think, who have become or have remained my friends more than I have met people in real life who have been my friends. It's pretty amazing. And we get to meet people like you. And why don't you tell us, you've got a very successful Twitter account. You have like a crap ton of followers. So tell us how that got started, what it's all about, and the other stuff that you do sci-fi related outside of the Twitter account.
Well, but first off, let's start at the end. Is you're talking about the haunted houses. By the way, I do a review every year of all the haunted houses in Southern California, and I want in. Okay? I want nice. In on that. I get into all the best ones. I was actually talking to the guy that sets up the Six Flags Magic Mountain, the guy in charge of that, getting some access on that one, and some other stuff. So we'll talk on that and see what we can get going.
Yeah, definitely. Have you been to one of those ones that, like, it's the extreme haunted houses where they, like, they can touch you and all that weird, like, crazy stuff? I don't know how to describe it more than that.
Well, there's one big one down towards San Diego. I actually went to a lecture by the guy who was talking about it with video of it. But I'm not a sadistic or masochistic, so I don't go to those particular ones. This one guy takes people and actually tortures them for an evening.
Oh my God.
He's got a waiting list 6 months long.
That kind of like tells you a little something about our society, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. So anyway, who am I? I'm just a big fan. I'm a fan of anything that can't happen in this world, whether it's Godzilla stomping on Tokyo or Star Trek, Star Wars, whatever it is. Big fan, and just average geek, opened up an account 3 years ago, called it Fantasy Sci, as in fantasy sci-fi, and just put my weird humor out there, and people liked it. They're nuts. People follow me, people respond to me, and I just use my imagination, and people enjoy it. So I'm at Fantasy Sci. I now have... Anybody who's not in Twitter does not know the value of this, but I have 100,000 followers, which I think like beats Kentucky Fried Chicken and other major brands, you know. So it's fun. So I'm truly somebody that's not selling anything. I'm not promoting anything besides people like you I like, and became a internet personality.
All right. One. And you get to, like, go to conventions and stuff, too, right?
Well, yeah, after I got big, after I got over the 50,000 mark, certain producers and movie studios started to notice. So they now invite me to do things. And I've been to a lot of fun things. I normally go, well, if you want me to do it, I want something for my people to see that is of value. So they've had me do things like when they had the Transformers go to Grauman's Chinese, which is no longer Grauman's, and drive and put its footprint in cement. They needed somebody with a radio to be inside shotgun in Optimus Prime to tell the driver when to go. And so I got to ride in Optimus Prime.
That is awesome.
That is awesome.
And, you know, and I hung out with the Optimus Prime people and all that, and all kinds of other things. The Batmobiles. I've climbed on every Batmobile down the line. So I've literally sat on every Batmobile. Now, don't tell the Batmobile people, because we had to pay the security guards to turn around. But including Bat One, which is pretty exciting.
That's one of the reasons why I picked our topic, our big discussion topic, as the topic tonight, which if you're watching us or listening to us, you'll have to wait to find out what it is. But it was based on that particular thing. So stay tuned, people. Cool. Well, it sounds like you have a pretty fun life, and we thank you for coming on, Sci-Fi Guy.
Thank you.
Ready to jump in, talk a little sci-fi?
Sure. What do you have going for today?
All right. Let's dig into the week's news. J.J. Abrams talked to Empire Magazine about the origin of the First Order, which is... Okay, for those that don't want to be spoiled by this, turn us off for a while, then come back, because this slightly spoils a few things on Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens. So, as you may or may not know, there is no Galactic Empire in the new Star Wars universe, which takes place how many years since Episode 6? 30? 30 years?
No, I think it was like 15 to 20.
Okay. Oh, in their universe, it's 15 to 20. But in our universe, it's more like 30, right?
Yeah.
Well, you kind of have to wonder, though, because the people, the actors that were in the original movies are in these movies. They look like they maybe have aged a little bit more than 15 years.
Yeah, well, you know, and I might be completely mistaken, but for some reason that number stuck in my head.
Maybe that's where it starts, and then we get to the introduction of those characters
later
on.
Yeah, that's possible as well. So basically, there's a new regime called the First Order, and they've taken the place of the Galactic Empire. And J.J. Abrams was interviewed by Empire Magazine, kind of explaining as to why that is. And he said that that it all came out of conversations about what would have happened if the Nazis all went to Argentina, but then started working together again. What could be born from that? Could the First Order exist as a group that actually admired the Empire? Could the work of the Empire had been seen as unfulfilled? And could Vader be a martyr? Could there be a need to see through what didn't get done? So basically, this First Order is a direct inspiration from the Galactic Empire. So you'll see, and it, you can kind of see it, right? You can see the stormtroopers look like stormtroopers, but not exactly like stormtroopers. I mean, there's slight differences. Kylo Ren, which is the main big bad in this, I guess he hero worships Vader and like makes a mask because of Vader. He doesn't need a mask, but he has one anyways.
They say he's not technically a Sith.
Yeah. Yeah. But he wields a lightsaber that he made himself. So that's the origin of the First Order and why they're called the First Order and not the Galactic Empire. I thought that was very interesting.
And for clarification, it does take place 30 years after the Battle of Endor.
Okay.
I was completely off base.
So, thoughts about this, guys? I don't know, if there needs to be that much of a discussion because he pretty much just lays it out there, right?
Well, I was thinking that it's interesting that could Vader be a martyr, and I thought, well, why would he be a martyr if he actually betrayed the people by siding with Luke, essentially, by saving his son from the Emperor, but then nobody really
knew that. Yep.
Yeah, and there's a scene that we've seen in the trailer. It's somebody holding up Vader's helmet, basically, right? That's all charred and melted. That was
like
some
going to Endor and picking up the debris.
Yeah, yeah, and I'm guessing that's like Kylo Ren, possibly.
That makes sense. There was
Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, weren't they pretty much rewritten or written way back then? And didn't we have them all? And they've come out in book form. For most, I think for all the Star Wars, with most, I understand changing some stuff. Maybe I'm a purist. But the story pre-existed. This movie being made and them changing concept.
Yeah, it's...
am I wrong on that?
Well, Lucasfilm and Disney basically said that most of those novels, most of those stories that have been written since are not canon anymore. They selected a few to remain canon, but a lot of those are outside of canon, which means their story is not the true story of what happened.
Which gives people a reason to go to the movie.
Yeah. All right, and them being in charge, too. I mean, they want the say. They want to be responsible. They want the story to go where they want the story to go, basically.
Right. They don't want to have to sit there and become historians of all the Star Wars fiction that's happened throughout the years. And have somebody say, oh, well, that doesn't work because this happened in this book over here. And they're like, yeah, you know what? We're just going to control it. We're just going to take control right now and tell you that you don't know what works. We'll tell you what works. And so they're in introducing the comic series they're doing at Marvel right now. We're finding changes in history already of the films that we've already seen by introducing characters like Han Solo's wife. When he's just met and is starting to have a relationship with Leia. So things are already different as it is. And going to the movie, I don't have a huge problem with it. I don't know that it was necessary if it was just the films themselves to change too much because we're going in looking at new characters. We have some establishment of Han and Chewie and Leia and everything being there, but if we're following different characters in the universe that haven't been introduced in the books and in the films, then that would be enough. But because they want to do this whole expanded universe with the other films that are coming out, with what is obviously going to be TV stuff and new books and new comics, then yeah, they're gonna have to just start all over again.
Well, I mean, look at the comics, look at Marvel, look at DC. they changed the stories for the live action. They changed the stories all the time in the comic books, but they change them for the live action. Like the CW changes DC stuff for their shows, and things are never the way they are originally.
CW changes things, but they're telling you that it's a different continuity from the beginning. Star Wars is something else. Now, there should be a giant green bunny running around in the Star Wars universe if you go off of some of the original Star Wars comics for Marvel. There's a lot of things that maybe worked better in the 70s and early 80s that don't quite work with how they want to present things now, and they don't want to be beholden to those things. But it's fine. I feel bad for the people who've worked so hard over the years to make great stories, and it doesn't necessarily take those stories out of existing. You can still go pick up the Jedi Twin stuff that existed and read those books. But for new fans or the young fans of today, they're never really going to know those characters. They're not going to know Han and Leia's twins. They're not going to know about Luke going and teaching young Jedis. So it's this moment of time that we're going to sort of see disappear to build this new continuity. And it's not totally dissimilar from what happened with Star Trek, but it feels a little more final than that.
Brad, your final thoughts on the story, then we'll move on.
Well, I really kind of believe very strongly in them kind of doing away with the old continuity to make way for the films. There's just no other way around it. So I'm really looking forward to the films, actually. I really am.
I'm particularly looking forward to the, what are they calling, anthology films or just Star Wars? No, they're calling them Star Wars stories now, not even anthologies anymore. You know, the Rogue...
Yeah, the spin-off stuff.
Right? Yeah, the Rogue One is the first one, and then there's going to be the one about young Han. Just the expanded universe stories are going to be very interesting. All right, let's move on to story number two. Man of Steel 2, said to be on permanent hold. Did you guys hear the rumor that George Miller, a.k.a. the guy behind Mad Max, might be directing the Man of Steel sequel? Did you guys hear about that rumor?
No.
Yeah, I'd heard it, and then it was almost immediately after, oh, well, it's probably not going to be Man of Steel 2, because that's on hold. They're giving him sort of a look into all of the different DC movies that are still coming up that haven't been cast with directors yet, and letting him kind of pick and see what he might be most interested in.
Exactly. That's exactly what's happening. According to John Schnepp, a filmmaker behind the recent documentary The Death of Superman Lives, that was that the Nicolas Cage movie, right?
Right.
Yeah. And what was George Miller wasn't involved in that, was he?
That was Tim Burton that was supposed to be directing that.
That's right. Yeah. Okay.
And Kevin Smith did the script for it.
Oh, I forgot about that. Okay. So, we've since heard from two sources that there might be substance to this rumor. But like Corey said, it may not necessarily be for Man of Steel 2. While this doesn't rule out the possibility of Miller taking on Man of Steel 2, another source has said that as far as they understand it, the sequel is on permanent hold. Now, at this stage, it's not clear what this means exactly. Have plans for a solo Superman film been abandoned, or is it just in a holding pattern to kind of get writers going on the story, that kind of thing? And this comes from Den of Geek, by the way, this story. So there's a couple of things going on here. There's the whole George Miller thing. Is he or isn't he directing Man of Steel 2? If not, is he directing another DC movie? And why is Man of Steel 2 on hold? I think that they're waiting to see how the rest of the DC films work. Like, are they going to be successful or not?
Yeah.
I think they're all going to be successful. I mean, we've really had, everybody's in that direction. It's a landslide at this time for the different movies. So I can't see it not being successful. I'm more worried about who's going to be playing the actor Superman. I could not have seen Nicolas Cage. He just would not be a Superman for me. What do you guys think?
Well, it's definitely going to be Henry Cavill for the foreseeable future in the DC Universe stuff as Superman. The thing about Man of Steel is, one, when they showed the release dates, the big list of all the superhero movies that DC was planning on doing, Man of Steel was way down the line for the sequel. But it wasn't like we weren't getting Superman stuff along the way. We definitely were with all the Justice League films, the prequel to Justice League with Batman v Superman, and then the Justice League films themselves. But it seems strange that after those, that it was way, way down that we were getting Man of Steel 2. I don't even think that Man of Steel 2 is even necessary if it's going to take 10 years to get to it, versus doing something that maybe represents Superman in the title instead. And since they've now introduced the idea that Ben Affleck is going to be starring in and directing 3 Batman movies that weren't even on that list before, I have a feeling things just shifted around. As far as Miller, I don't know that they've announced a lot of these other movies yet. I don't know who's necessarily directing Justice League, but I could see Miller doing a really interesting take on Aquaman, doing kind of the polar opposite of what he did with the new Mad Max movie. Because those kinds of harsh conditions, if you put him into an underwater adventure, Aquaman, the way they have him defined in the movie universe, looks like he's more of a barbarian take, looks more of a hardcore take than what Aquaman is in the comics. I could see Miller doing something fun with that.
All right. Well, I guess time will tell. I mean, it's only a rumor so far, but it's totally a rumor that could happen. That's my call on it. All right, anything more you guys want to talk about on this pator? On this pator, I proclaim it a pator. On this particular story, anything that we missed may have glanced over?
No, I think we covered it.
Okay, I really wanted to talk about the CW shows this week because there were some great. And I know it's not on any of these on the lineup, but what was the character they cast in The Flash Season 2 this week, Brad?
Jesse Chambers, which is the daughter of Jesse Quick and Liberty Bell.
I mean,
Johnny
Quick.
I mean, we're already talking about the DC universe. We might as well mention it, right? I mean, we'd be doing a disservice if we didn't mention this.
yes we would.
So she is a Golden Age character, right? Originally
she's the daughter of Golden Age characters. Her parents were part of the All-Star Squadron from DC, which was the 40s team that was a lot of characters that were eventually in the Justice Society, but her parents are Johnny Quick, who was the speedster, and Liberty Bell, who got her powers from basically a belt buckle that summoned the powers from the actual Liberty Bell.
Oh, I thought she had to ring the Liberty Bell.
When she'd rub her belt buckle, it would cause Liberty Bell to ring, and then she would get her superhuman abilities.
That's dumb.
And the daughter has essentially aspects of both. She's got the super speed, so she went by Jesse Quick for a while, and then she took over the Liberty Bell identity in the Justice Society comics, and then she went back to being Jesse Quick right before Flashpoint happened and the whole new 52 came into being.
Do you think she's going to be from Earth 2? Because there's going to be a lot of that going on, it sounds like, on Season 2 of Flash.
I kind of wonder, they've been talking about the multiverse, so I wonder if they're going to be split. It would make more sense if they split up those characters, because technically Jay Garrick and Jesse Quick would be kind of from the same universe, mm-hmm. technically, from a comic.
They were essentially both from Earth 2 originally. Yeah. And yeah, I mean, she could be like the next generation of superheroes compared to Jay Garrick's character when he comes over. Or, like Brad said, it could just be that we get speedsters from a whole bunch of different universes.
Because they're talking about Wally West being on, and then there was somebody else that was one of the speedsters too. I forget who it was. I don't know, but it sounds like they're putting together Justice Society of America, sort of, on the CW.
Maybe, yeah. We'll have to see how that works out. Definitely a gathering of speedsters, I'd be interested to see if they pull out like Max Mercury.
Yeah.
Who was a, gosh, he was another speedster, and he was a mentor for Wally West.
And then later became like the surrogate dad for Bart Allen, who was Impulse, and later Kid Flash.
Yeah.
Do you think there's too much going on? I mean, it's hard to judge because we haven't watched any of season two yet, but do you have a feeling that there's too much going on, or do you think they're going to structure it so it doesn't seem like there's too much going on?
Well, there's nothing more exciting than having a lot that you can draw from as long as you don't draw from it all at the same time. And introducing another speedster, especially another female character, isn't a bad idea considering that we're going to have the Heroes of Tomorrow show coming out. It's not going to be always possible to have Arrow and Flash join up on this other program if it takes off and goes further. But having another speedster character with maybe some different abilities, if they involve some Liberty Bell stuff, means that we can get that without always having to have Grant Gustin do double duty on his show and these other shows, especially if they also want to keep continuing to have crossovers between Flash and Arrow. So everything that they add is great. It's extra flavor. It never hurts the comics to have more characters to choose from. It's just how many things you throw on the screen at once, and then you get a Spider-Man 3 situation.
Yeah.
That's what I'm worried about.
And the other thing is having too many speedsters makes the one that you have less unique.
Yeah.
So you got to be careful with that.
Yeah. What's your take, Sci-Fi Guy?
As far as whether they should have more or not, I think you have to have a villain, and we're running out of villains. We're going to talk about some other things with who villains need to be, and you need to have a villain that can actually beat your villain. I mean, your hero. Yeah. So they're just trying to make it so they can keep you on. We've made our hero too invincible.
Sure.
The big bad this season on The Flash is going to be Zoom. And it sounds like they haven't even casted the guy yet. So it's not going to be Professor Wells. It's not going to be somebody we already know. It's going to be somebody completely different. And maybe they're bringing these other characters on to help Barry Allen fight Zoom. Zoom is pretty formidable, right?
Well, I mean, Zoom and
the Reverse Flash originally was Zoom. He was Professor Zoom. And then they later brought in another character called Zoom, Hunter somebody or another, Hunter Solomon?
Hunter Solomon, yep.
Who was trying to basically use Flash's technology to save himself he wanted to go back in time. And so he got time traveling powers that worked close to super speed. But did change things up. And he was a little bit crazier. He was more like a Joker character where he was trying to affect what was then the Wally West version of the Flash to make him a better hero so that he wouldn't just be always trying to do good things. He would be trying to, he would run into things more headstrong and determined. I think Zoom is just, unfortunately, it's too similar to the Reverse Flash to make that be your second villain in a row. I would rather see a more of a gathering of the rogues. We still haven't seen enough with Captain Boomerang. I know we're getting Captain Cold and Heatwave over on Heroes of Tomorrow, but I'd like to see the rogues get together and cause more havoc for Flash.
Well, who knows? I mean, These are all rumors at this point. We have no idea what's going to happen. So I guess we'll just have to wait for October, whatever. I forget the exact date that both...
I think it's my birthday. I think it's October 7th.
Okay. Well, happy birthday. That's going to be a great birthday, Corey.
Yes. But the thing with The Flash is that he's got what is one of the best stable of villains in all of comics. It's The Flash, it's Batman, and it's Spider-Man. Those are the greatest groups of villains that you could have for any characters. So I don't think we're going to have a shortage of people for him to fight. It's just how credible do the fights become and how do they make it a challenge for him week to week.
Okay, let's move on from superheroes to people that want to eat your flesh. How about that? How about that for a segue? Fear the Walking Dead is the biggest cable series premiere ever. The 90-minute debut episode on Sunday delivered 10.1 million viewers and an incredible 6.3 rating among adults 18-49. Back in 2010, the flagship Walking Dead series debuted to 5.4 million viewers, which was considered quite high at the time. The zombie drama's ratings have grown every year since, with the most recent fifth season premiering to a record 17.3 million viewers last fall. Fear getting such a strong start bodes well for the show's future. The prequel series tells the story of a Los Angeles family at the beginning of the zombie apocalypse. Sci-fi guy, how's that zombie apocalypse going out there?
Well, so far we haven't had them walking down the street, so we're doing pretty good. And then, you know, shotguns are good. We're all loading up. We've already got them. That's the thing about Los Angeles. We've already got our shotguns. We know where people's heads are. So not a problem down here. Zombies would not make it far, especially if they started off in, like, East L.A. or something. Everybody's armed. It's pretty easy.
So
although you got to be careful because – you know, in L.A., zombies, they're already pretty malnourished before they even die.
Well, because they don't have brains, or what do you say?
No, I was going to say because they're quite thin.
I don't know how thin everybody is in Los Angeles, but we have our share of Twinkies.
Did you guys all see the Fear the Walking Dead premiere on Sunday, or was I the only person?
I did not see it.
You were the only one out of the 10.1 million that did, so you probably just replayed it a bunch.
Yeah, I was the one. Because I'm the Flash. I can do it a bunch
Dave's
of times.
Dave's got a whole stack of Nielsen boxes just sitting there in the basement corner all on one channel. No, we watched it. My wife and I watched it. She actually reminded me that it was coming up. And made me watch it. It was not a big hit in our house. By the end of the first hour, she's like, "I'm going to bed." I said, "Well, it's not actually done yet." She goes, "No, I'm going to bed."
Oh,
that's too bad. I mean, I knew that the first episode or the first couple episodes would be building up to something. You're not going to just – it's not The Walking Dead where, bam, it's zombie-infested hospital with Rick trying to escape. This is watch slowly
as the horror unfolds.
The horror unfolds. I'm trying to think of the epidemic. The epidemic spreads.
Sure.
No, that's absolutely true. But it's building up to something that we are already familiar with. We are seeing. We've been watching The Walking Dead for several seasons, so it's building to something that is already so well ingrained in us that it's not really a surprise. The other thing about The Walking Dead is we're used to slow from that show. I watched the second season. Carl kept getting out of the house. They never looked in the barn for the little girl until halfway. We can handle slow moving if the characters are interesting. We just were kind of frustrated. We didn't like anybody in this.
Really? I thought I thought the dad was awesome. I thought being a stepdad, I can relate to this. He was doing a hell of a job being the father to a kid that's not his kid.
To being the father to three kids who none of whom seem to respect him. And that was kind of what ruined the first season of Falling Skies for me, is like the kids killed my interest in the show right away.
Yeah, it's always the kids. The kids,
always the damn
I mean,
kids.
Look at what Star Trek always does. They try to always squeeze kids in their shows, and it never works. Never works.
Just shoot them in the leg and throw them at the zombies and keep going.
Yeah.
But if giant dinosaurs are attacking the kids, then you need kids.
Yeah.
Because kids work well with dinosaurs.
That's true. And they know Unix, which is also important.
And but not dinosaurs on TV, because that doesn't work.
No.
Are you looking at, like, toy dinosaurs? Barney or something, or what?
No. That show, that Steven Spielberg produced show that was on a couple of years ago that failed utterly.
Oh, Terra Nova.
Yeah. I thought it was a great show, but apparently nobody else did. didn't last.
Yeah, it was something.
That was the same year that Almost Human was on, I believe. Or it was the next season or the season before that. I forget.
Yeah, I think Almost Human came out after Terra Nova.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
So it was like 2 years in a row, one of my favorite series didn't make it. I was utterly...
You were pretty bummed.
Yeah,
Dave, how many years in a row have you been watching Fox, seeing great sci-fi shows disappear?
Well, Corey, it goes back to the days of... back in my day.
In Art 1. Yeah.
I still go back to Briscoe County Jr.
I go back to the spinoff to... Not the spinoff, but it was from the producers of The X-Files. It was the one in Space Above and Beyond. I loved that show more than life itself.
I thought you were going to say Creepy Lynx or whatever that... Freaky Lynx.
What?
There was... Yeah, look it up. Go to IMDb. Okay. I'm going back to Beans Baxter, so you're schooled.
Okay.
Sorry.
No, I'm sure...
Mantis, anyone?
Yeah, I'm sure Mantis. There was another show before then, but I really enjoyed Space Above and Beyond, and I was very upset physically and emotionally when they canceled that show.
Understandable.
Morgan and Wong, what a great team.
Yeah, I know. And they're back. One of them is back for the new X-Files. I think Wong is. I don't think Morgan is.
No, okay. Morgan. Man, Darren Morgan was the best.
All right, so Fear the Walking Dead, episode 2. Hopefully episode 2 will turn it around for you guys. So please keep watching, Corey.
I don't know.
Come on.
I know there's only 5 episodes left, but it's 5 long.
Do it for Dave. Do it for me.
Do it for the kids.
Okay, let's go back to the world of superheroes, this time Marvel, Captain America, and Iron Man's Civil War teams have been revealed. Will you be part of Team Captain America or Team Iron Man? So apparently there was some artwork that was leaked online of some posters, and the teams on the posters have been revealed. Are you guys ready for them? Do you want to know the teams?
Let's hear it.
All right. The teams are War Machine, Iron Man, Black Panther, The Vision, and Black Widow on one team, and then on the other, Captain America, Bucky Barnes, the Winter Soldier, the Falcon, and his drone, which is an homage to the original Falcon, had a sidekick, right?
Red Wing.
Yeah. So Red Wing is like a drone that helps him, the new Falcon, do stuff better, I guess. I don't know. Hawkeye is also on Team Cap, Ant-Man, and former S.H.I.E.L.D. agent Sharon Carter, which is cool that she's... what's that actor who's playing her? She was on that show Revenge, right?
Right.
And she was also... Oh, she was also on that show Everwood. Did you guys ever see Everwood, the TV show Everwood?
No. Mm-mm.
Yeah, she was the main actress on that show as well.
I would probably know her better if it was Deadwood.
Yeah. Totally different shows. This one took place in modern times. Deadwood took place in the 1800s.
As long as they cursed the same amount, then I'm fine with it. No, I didn't even know that Sharon Carter was necessarily coming back for the second movie, so I'm glad that she is, because she's an important character in the comics.
She's a very important character.
But she was not utilized a lot in the second Cap movie, but she was good in it. It was just... not what the story was about. So seeing her on Cap's team was nice. I was surprised that we didn't see Wanda at all, because I thought that she was going to be part of this, considering the end of Avengers Age of Ultron. I don't know. I assume Iron Man's team has dental. That would be nice.
Gosh, I'd hope so.
So which teams would you guys want to be on? Or no, here's the real big question. Which team do you think is stronger than the other?
Iron Man. Because, quite frankly, Iron Man could land on Captain America, game over.
The Vision is a big, big power.
Yeah.
And Black Panther is an unknown, but what I know of Black Panther, he's very, very strong as well, as just a character, as an intelligence. they've got some heavy firepower on that team, but I always got to root for Cap.
Well, Cap and Bucky, having both been treated to the super soldier serum, are also going to be master strategists, especially with, you know, Bucky and Cap's army training as well. Hawkeye, he's a stealth guy. And Ant-Man, again, he's a stealth guy as well. So,
and if you get Ant-Man on one of Hawkeye's arrows...
It's totally going to happen. You know what's going to happen.
I'm dying to see that happen.
Yeah.
Well, he's on Hawkeye's shoulder in the picture.
Yep.
So that tells you something.
A lot of people miss it in the picture.
Yeah.
Yeah, the only unknown really then is what is Sharon Carter bringing to it? She was just kind of starting into more intense training at the end of Winter Soldier. So what kind of state is she in to be in that lineup of other characters? You know, how did she earn that spot?
I don't know. I guess that will be, they will tell the story in the movie.
Yeah, that'll be an interesting story to tell.
The one big reveal that is not revealed in this poster is Spider-Man. We know pretty much that Spider-Man is going to be introduced in Captain America Civil War, but he's not in the posters. So maybe that's going to be the big surprise or something like that.
Also, I understand that Aunt May is, Marissa Tomei is playing the character. She's supposed to cameo in this as well. So I wonder if Spider-Man's in it as a hero, or if it's sort of an after credits thing of they go and they meet Spider-Man afterwards and kind of recruit him.
Well, supposedly he was in Germany. And they were doing some major action scenes in Germany, the filming in Germany. So that kind of leads one to believe that he's actually going to be in the film itself.
My only thing is that we have not seen any leak of costume stuff for him yet, and that would be a hard one to keep secret.
No, I saw a picture. It wasn't like the full-fledged costume, but it was like an early Spider-Man, like his first costume that he tries.
But I mean, if they're doing footage, I just wonder if we would see Spider-Man.
Oh, yeah.
At least like a mocap or something.
Yeah, good point. I don't know. My theory is Spider-Man is going to be like an innocent, like, third party, and somehow he's going to inspire the team to come together at the end. But I'm sure that's not what's going to happen. That's just my head.
I'm kind of wondering if both teams aren't trying to recruit him and he gets kind of torn between them.
Good point. Yeah, that's a very good point.
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah. Who thinks that Marissa Tomei being Aunt May makes you feel really old?
Marissa Tomei has been a crush of mine since I first saw her on A Different World. And she still looks amazing. I don't feel old at all seeing her as Aunt May. It's like, okay, you're Aunt May, but you're still really just a stunning woman. So, yeah. Good.
There's no rule that says aunts or aunts need to be old and crotchety like the original Aunt May, right?
Yeah. Actually, Sally Field is a very lovely woman, too. So,
yeah.
It's not the same. I think we're old enough to know that the age stuff that we think of, the Aunt May in the comics has always looked like she was 90 and decrepit and just about to fall over. But in the films, it hasn't been that way.
Hmm. Yeah, I was going to say, just when they came out with Sally Field as Aunt May, I just really wanted to get in the coffin. I felt old. How can Sally Field, you know? I guess I still think of her as being really young.
It's like,
it also makes sense if we're having a younger Peter Parker, though, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like the doctors from Doctor Who. They keep on getting younger. So we'll have Marissa Tomei in this version, and then the next one's going to be really old.
It'll
if you
be
were the doctor.
No, it'll be
Emma Stone. When you get younger each time.
Yep. All right. So there you go. There was our news. Before we get into the big question of the week, we want you to make sure that you don't miss a single episode of the Sci-Fi Geeks Club. And it's very easy to subscribe to the podcast. All you have to do is go to our website, gncasts.com. That's gncasts.com. And click on the subscription link Or does it say subscribe? I forget. Yeah, I think just subscribe. You click on the subscribe tab, and that will take you to a page with all the choices that you can use to subscribe to this podcast. You can get us on Stitcher. You can get us on iTunes. We're available on all the other like podcatcher type apps that you can put on your device. Or if you want to just like get the link to the episode emailed to you, that's also an option. Or, you know, you can just save the podcast page as part of your favorites on your browser. You can listen to it that way, you know. We give you many options. We make it very easy for you. If you do the iTunes or Stitcher route, please take the extra time and give us 5 stars on iTunes or give us a thumbs up on Stitcher. That helps us get more subscribers. And you know what they say, the more the merrier. I mean, the more people that listen and take part in the podcast, the better we become. We get some feedback from you guys. We make it a communal experience for everybody. So please make sure that you subscribe and get involved, get your family involved, get your friends involved, get your household pet involved with the Sci-Fi Geeks Club and the rest of the shows on the Galactic Netcast Network. And we thank you in advance for subscribing.
Podcast of Terror, big with turtles.
Nice.
Yes.
I like turtles.
You got the turtle demographic all sewn up there, Corey.
Well, you don't sew them up because then it's just impossible for them to hear you.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right, so this week's big question kind of came from something that Sci-Fi Guy has done. He has gotten into, or he has touched, every single Batmobile that there's ever been. Do you count the brand new one, or is that that one's not available yet, right? That one's not making the circuits. That's still...
Yeah, everyone that's been in the movie currently, yes, okay. I have. But if it's not released, it's not out.
Okay, yet. All right. So the big question this week is, what is your favorite vehicle type from sci-fi that isn't a spaceship, a teleporter, or a time machine? Now, I got this huge list, but you don't have to pick from this list. If you brought your own, if you're BYOV, I guess, that's fine too. So let's just kind of go around the room, and if yours is on this list, fine. If not, we'll run down the list at the end, the ones that we didn't get mentioned. So, Corey, what is your favorite sci-fi vehicle type that isn't a spaceship, teleporter, or a time machine?
You know, I see that you have Kit from Knight Rider on here, and there were several vehicles on Knight Rider that were like that. There was car, there was the truck Goliath that wasn't really a personality. Car was like an anti-Kit, but there was another show that had a similar kind of thing, except it was a motorcycle called Street Hawk.
Street Hawk.
And I always dug the heck out of that motorcycle. For some reason, that one just really stuck out of my head. As like, and it wasn't an intelligent vehicle. He actually had a guy who was kind of feeding him information. That might be my go-to, but the only thing that beats it out and beats out everything, and I'm going to say this right now, so I challenge you to beat this, is Cursor from Automan.
Oh,
because Cursor could become a car, could become a helicopter,
yep.
Could do everything, and Desi was Arnaz a personality Jr. of itself. As long as I don't have to hang out with Desi Arnaz Jr., Cursor from Automan is exactly the way to go.
What year was Automan?
It's early 80s. It's about the same time as the Whiz Kids was on. So
yeah, 82, 83, 84, somewhere in there.
Refresh my memory. What's the Whiz Kids again?
WizKids was a group of four teenagers who did like pre-hacking computer stuff.
Oh, no.
And they had a computer that had a little robot that would make flip the disks around or bring it over and stuff. It was just, at the time, it was really cool to me.
Okay. So that's your pick for favorite sci-fi vehicle that's not a spaceship, teleporter, or time machine?
Yeah, because Cursor could be any vehicle.
Okay. So, of the ones that are on this list that wasn't yours originally, which would you pick?
Batmobile.
Okay.
because it's the Batmobile. My dream car has always been doing a classic Volkswagen Bug up like the original Batmobile from the Adam West TV series.
Well, the great thing about the Batmobile is you can make it do whatever you need it to do, right? It could drive itself. It's got armor. It's got weapons.
Yep.
Whatever Batman needed it to be, he could design it to do that one thing, right?
Yeah.
Well, why not go with the Batwing? Then you can fly too.
Yeah.
And still
I just don't
do
trust
anything you want.
Make a flying car. I think the German engineering is not nearly strong enough.
See, I think you're wrong, Corey. I think you could do that with a Volkswagen if you had the technical knowledge too, you could make it fly.
Maybe a VW bus.
Yeah.
Or a big cliff.
Yes.
All right, sci-fi guy, our guest. What is your favorite sci-fi vehicle type that isn't the spaceship, teleporter, or time machine?
Well, my favorite vehicle has always been Airwolf, and people may or may not know what that was. That was a 1985 TV show.
Yep.
So based on 1985 technology, to have a super cool paint job on a fast helicopter that actually goes Mach 2 and can take on a fighter jet, totally bulletproof, only way to get it. A hit with a surface to air, but we've got chafe and anti everything. We've got stealth technology, and we have whisper mold, and the computer system is outrageous. You can pipe it. You can tap into any telephone. You can go your floor settings where you can see inside the heat of a home. And then the weaponry that drops out of this sleek little body has every kind of missile you can imagine that never needs to be reloaded, nor never has to be fueled either, apparently, since they never did put fuel in it. And the best part of it, and give me a second here, is it had the best theme song, because there's never been a better cavalry song than the Earwolf song, where if I'm in trouble, I want to hear that music and have Earwolf come over me and take everybody out. So that's my pick.
Who is the guy that did all the theme songs from 1980s action TV shows?
Mike Post.
Is that a Mike Post? Is that a Mike Post theme?
Who?
I'd love to find out.
See, the thing is before Airwolf, there was a movie called Blue Thunder.
Oh, that's right.
With Roy Schneider.
Yeah.
That was very similar. And then they had a Blue Thunder TV series that aired at the same time that Airwolf started up. But Airwolf just out-badassed Blue Thunder as a show. So that one stuck around. And it's got to be, well, I don't think it was Ernest Borgnine, so it might have been Jan Michael Vincent that really sold people on it. But it was a good show.
To me, it was Jan Michael Vincent. He was definitely the go-to actor back in the day. He was really big on miniseries. Yeah, miniseries. What was the one that he... Oh, Winds of War and War and Remembrance. I remember he was on those. That was... I don't know.
Which, by the way, I played with all those boats.
Awesome. Nice.
Wow.
Good sci-fi guy.
When I used to sneak into the studios.
What was Airwolf based off? Was that supposed to be like an Apache, or is that pre-Apache helicopters?
Hold on a second.
Or something completely original. It might have been something completely original.
No, it was actually a actual ship. I looked it up earlier today. It was the Bell 222.
Yep.
That was painted cool, and they added some extra pieces to it.
Okay. All right. Who wants to go next? Brad, what's your favorite all-time sci-fi vehicle that isn't a spaceship, teleporter, or time machine?
See, I had a couple of things that I put down, but all the 80s talk. you know, Well, it's a spaceship, so no, it doesn't qualify. I was going to whip out Salvage 1, which is an 80s television show with Ernest Borgnine. Or no, it was Andy Mayberry guy.
Andy Weir?
Andy Griffith.
Andy Griffith. And it was actually based on a man from Wisconsin, I believe, who created a rocket out of salvage yard stuff.
Oh, I've heard of this series. Yeah.
Yeah. And it didn't last very long. But again, it's technically a spaceship because they launched this thing out into orbit. So it doesn't qualify. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go back to my original answer, which is another, well, we're kind of stuck in the 80s here, but a film called The Rocketeer. And it was a comic book story that Dave Stevens wrote and drew. And Disney made it into a film. And it highlights an experimental jetpack that Howard Hughes built. And this test pilot, through some amazing circumstances, ends up with this jetpack and decides to play around with it and gets caught into some intrigue and kind of becomes a superhero of the 30s. And it's a very fascinating story.
Yeah. And Dave Stevens wound up using Betty Page as one of the characters in the comic. I just completely stole her likeness the entire time and made her the dream girl in it. When they had Jennifer Connelly play her in the movie, I think they changed her last name.
They had to change the name completely because there were definitely some rights issues and stuff there.
Because Betty Page resurfaced. She had been missing, I think, for a bunch of years, and so they assumed that it was something you could get away with.
Yep.
Would you classify The Rocketeer as, like, diesel punk or, like... What would the because it really, I love that look to it. I love the look to the both the movie and the comic.
I wouldn't qualify it as diesel punk because diesel punk is less elegant. I mean, it has an Art Deco sensibility to it, which is more the style of the 30s. It really kind of permeated the architecture, it permeated print, it permeated so many different things, and it's a very unique style. And I wouldn't qualify it as diesel punk.
I just love that. I love the whole goggles look and the rivets and the leather jacket. Looks very World War II. I know it was pre World War II, right?
Yeah. Well, it's the mid to late 30s, so Germany is very much in action, and it's very much happening in the European sector. America has not entered into the war. So there's a lot of talk of, you know, should we be in the war? What's going on? You know, what are the Germans doing? And that all kind of gets dealt with in the comic and in the movie. So
yeah. The comics went between the 30s, 40s, and 50s. So you can picture The Rocketeer in the same era as Indiana Jones or as the Mummy films, that kind of time span.
Yep.
Sure.
And the finale, which was at the Griffith Park Observatory, it's kind of interesting if that's where the beginning of Terminator 1 was.
Oh.
Same exact location.
Sure.
I found that to be interesting. I go, okay, so because when I saw Terminator, I was thinking Rocketman.
That is awesome.
All right, cool, Brad. I like your pick very much.
That is a good pick.
I got a couple, actually, and they come from our list that I put together for this. My first pick is Voltron, because I always liked the idea of being part of a bigger whole, but then taking off, you know, disassembling from your larger hole into your God, I'm terrible tonight. I can't think of
disengage.
Words. Disengage
your component parts.
Yes. So that's the basic concept for Voltron. Corey, what were the okay? There were the lions. There are five lions.
There were five lions with five pilots. The lions were cool. If you watch the show when it started, it took them a while to find all the lions. But the lions could fight and do stuff too, and then even could sometimes conjure like blade weapons in their mouths. But then they would eventually form Voltron, and Voltron would be a human figure type of robot and be able to form different kinds of weapons. So they would have to work in unison. It's not completely dissimilar from how the Zords are in Power Rangers. I think Power Rangers probably owe a good deal to Voltron, but Voltron owes a lot to a lot of the other anime stuff that was coming up before it.
Yeah, and Power Rangers was live action. Voltron
I used to hang out with one of their stunt women.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, just random information.
That's what we're here for.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. And I threw Giganter in there because when you said Voltron, it made me think of Giganter, who actually as a child, he was my first hero, was Giganter being the second anime to hit America.
Okay.
Right after Speed Racer.
Okay.
He was a big hero for me when I was a young kid.
I'm definitely going to have to look him up after we're done with the podcast because I'm curious now. I've never heard of Gigant. I think I've heard the name, but I've never actually seen it before, so I'm curious.
Yeah, it was like 1965. He came out right after Speed Racer and right before Astro Boy,
yeah.
I think, with the anime series.
Okay.
And he was pretty neat. And Voltron, I think, was derived from Gigantor, who 10 years prior was a Japanese. So he was actually from 1955 or something in Japan.
They're all connected. I like
yes.
that. There was a couple of different versions of Voltron. There was the lions, like Corey said. Then there was a number of different space vehicles that were different types of vehicles.
It was made up of 15 separate vehicles that went together to form the robot. And the only real connection it had to the other Voltron was that one of the characters was cousins with one of the ones from the ships.
And in all reality, those were two separate shows in Japan. In the U.S., they were connected, but in Japan, they were not connected. They were two completely different shows that they both named Voltron. And then there was a third one, too. I don't remember the premise behind that one, but there was a third type of Voltron show that was on.
Three robots that went together into different kind of shapes to build up. So it had multiple arms and stuff. You would see it on the back of the Voltron figures when you would buy them. It would show you the different versions of Voltrons that existed.
Okay.
But I don't remember the third Voltron. Actually, the Lions one was considered Voltron 3. I don't remember that three robot Voltron ever showing up in the series at all.
Okay. Okay, so my second pick is kind of a goofy pick, but it's something very obscure that hardly anybody would recognize or remember, and it's the bus from The Big Bus. And what The Big Bus was like a made-for-TV movie, and hang on one second. I'm going to open up the IMDb article. It was basically this gigantic bus that was run on nuclear fuel that would go nonstop from New York to Denver. And it was a parody of disaster films, and it was released in 1976. And I'm looking at the stars, and I only recognize Stockard Channing from it. I don't recognize anybody else.
Ned Beatty, who played in the Superman films.
Oh, yeah, there he is.
Superman films.
Okay.
Rene Auberjonois.
Oh, my God. Odo.
Yeah. This has got a lot of people. Ruth Gordon is in here. Larry Hagman.
Oh.
Sally Kellerman. Richard Mulligan. Lynn Redgrave. This is like a cast like you would get in It's a Mad, 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 Mad World.
Okay. I think that's the kind of the vibe they were going after. I didn't see. I was only looking at the first three that IMDb shows. So
yeah, this is kind of stellar. I want to find this now.
Yeah, it's totally up your alley. I think you'd really enjoy it. It's 1970s cheese. It was supposed to be that way. It's a parody, is what it was, and it's a bus that would go nonstop, run on nuclear fuel, and it was sabotaged by a group of a group that was allied with the oil lobby. So it's, I think it was basically a reflection of the times, because the 1970s, especially around 1976, you had the oil embargoes and the oil the gas shortages. So it was basically a reflection of what was going on with that. And let me know if you find it, because I'd love to watch it again too, because I have vague memories of this. Because it was just a giant bus with, like, it was super long. It had like a swimming pool in it. It had a bowling alley in it. Like, it was just this, like the description says, it is a parody of disaster films, because disaster films were huge in the 70s. You had the Poseidon Adventure, you had the Towering Inferno, anything that could catch fire, or blow up, or whatever, earthquakes happened in the 1970s in movies and made-for-TV shows.
The airport movies.
Yeah.
And this is probably around the same time as, maybe even just a little bit before, Airplane coming out, which is also a disaster movie parody. So
yeah.
They could even be a precursor to that.
Yep.
But quite the cast. That's incredible.
Yep.
All right. So there's our picks for our favorite sci-fi vehicle type. The rest of them on the list, I had the Land Speeder or speeder bikes from Star Wars. I think everybody likes those.
Yep.
Light Cycle from Tron. We had the Helicarrier from Marvel. Powered exoskeletons like Iron Man or the suit from Edge of Tomorrow. You had the train from Snowpiercer. I don't know if you guys have seen Snowpiercer. It's a great movie.
Oh, yeah.
No.
It's a post-apocalyptic... It takes place in a post-apocalyptic world where the remnants of the human race is on this train that's like a perpetual motion train. It never stops. And
it travels around the world constantly.
Yeah. It stars Chris Evans. Chris Evans is in it. And hardly recognized with a beard. It's weird to see him as non-Captain America character. We had Kit from Knight Rider. Hindenburg 3 from Sky Captain in the World of Tomorrow.
Sure.
I always want to write in something called Hindenburg.
Don't say it.
My wife's suggestion, which was the buggy from Star Trek Nemesis, when they were they came down on that shuttle and then they came out of the shuttle in that dune buggy, basically.
That reminds me, Wonderbug from Sid and Marty Krofft. That's another one that I would like.
And there's another one that I didn't include on this list, but it was on this Saturday morning live action TV show. It took place in the far future, where they traveled in an RV in a nuclear wasteland of the planet Earth, like looking for remnants of humanity. And they were basically riding around in a giant RV. And I thought that was brilliant. Sequest DSV from the Sequest TV show is on this list. And Hoverboard from Back to the Future.
Let me jump back to Kit for a second, because I've always thought that Michael Knight should have been fired. If I was his boss, I'd be going, why are you jumping out of your bulletproof vehicle to have a fist fight? That has always got to me. I mean, even back then, I'm going, the guy wants to get in a fist fight and gets out of a bulletproof car. Yep. Why did we give it to you? If you're just going to get out of it.
Because the people shooting at him were the same people who shot at the A-team all the time. They couldn't hit anything.
Yeah, no need to actually have a weapon. You know, MacGyver, you know, never carried a weapon.
Yep.
Just a knife.
That's funny. That never dawned on me that he was always jumping out of it.
But they expected him to get out of the car because they gave him the cool watch that he could talk to Kit with.
Yeah.
It had the same lights on it, too, so you knew he was talking to Kit.
Yeah.
And he had to get out so he could sing.
You know,
well, it brought the female audience to sci-fi at the time, so...
You know, you guys realize that we're almost to that point now, right? That we're almost to the point of having Kit and being able to communicate with your car with your wristwatch. Because we have smartwatches and we have smart cars. Mm-hmm. Now, the next step is...
We don't have bulletproof cars.
Yeah, that's true. And we don't have intelligent cars. you know, with a personality, the likes of...
Although, adding Siri and some of these other things, Cortana, any of those, we're getting close.
Yeah, that's true.
You're going to get an intelligent coach to go, no, I'm sorry, I want to take you to the bar again. You've been there too often this week. I'm not going again, and I'm going to take you over this way. I'm going to take you here. You've not been good to Aunt May. Got to go visit her. So you can have someone to nag at you when we have intelligent cars.
I'm sorry, Jim. I can't drive you there.
Well, that's why I think that self-driving cars is probably a good thing, because they're going to make right decisions. They're going to make the right choices of not driving and drinking and driving, or not going to the bar to begin with to get drunk and drive home drunk. So
no, they'll take you. You can get as drunk as you want, and then they'll just take you home.
Yeah, that's
it never
true.
Becomes a problem.
We just name it Hal, and we're fine.
All right. Hey, speaking of drinking, we have the Geek Drink of the Week next. But before we talk about that, we invite you to become a member of the Galactic Collective and join our massively growing online community of other listeners, fans, and hosts. And how you can do that is by going to our website, which is gncasts.com, and click on the Join the Galactic Collective little box on the right-hand side of the screen. And the next page that you'll go to, you will get choices of different levels of being part of the Galactic Collective. There is hardly being involved at all and just following us on Twitter, to becoming a member of the Facebook group and engaging with us, bringing up conversations yourself, answering questions that we pose to group members, that kind of thing. Or the third and highest level, which is becoming a member of our Galactic Netcast Patreon. You can give as little as $1 a month, and you can actually make decisions for the network. We have a bunch of possible new things in our future, and we could use some help making decisions, because Lord knows we're not the best decision makers sometimes. So become a member of the Galactic Collective and be part of that top tier and help us make decisions, or just be the lower tier or the middle tier. All we ask is that you get involved in our community in some way, be it financially or be it just spreading the word. The Galactic Netcast Gospel, spread it to your friends, family, and whoever else will listen. And we appreciate it no matter what level that you're involved in. Okay. Geek Drink of the Week. Every episode we touch on a mixed drink that's been inspired by certain aspects of science fiction. And this week it is the Sonic Screwdriver. It had to happen sooner or later, right? So, because you got the screwdriver, you add the Doctor Who element, and you got the Sonic Screwdriver. So make sure that you get your piece of paper out and write this down. And at your next cocktail party, you mix up your Sonic Screwdriver and you impress your friends. So the ingredients are 2 ounces of vodka, 4 ounces orange juice, and 1.5 ounces of Island Blue Pucker. I have no idea what Island Blue Pucker is. Sounds interesting.
Sounds self-explanatory. It sounds like something that's extra sour that's going to kind of like make your lips pucker up, mm-hmm. and just give it a little bit of a twist on the... A screwdriver is pretty basic, but you want something that's going to give it a lot of pizzazz.
And that's
also, it sounds like it's going to give it a nice color because it's going to turn green.
Yeah, okay, so here's what you do. You pour the vodka into an ice-filled glass, preferably a highball-sized glass. That's the real tall ones, right? The tall and skinny ones? That's highball, I'm guessing?
You know what a low ball? It's the lower, wider tumbler. The high ball, I think, is the slightly taller version of that same type of glass.
Okay, all right. I saw the picture earlier. I just don't remember exactly what it looks like. Okay, so you pour the vodka in there with the ice, and then you add the orange juice and stir slowly. Then, here's the kicker: pour the pucker into the center and let it sink. And apparently, it looks really cool with backlit lighting of some kind. And there's a picture on the link that we'll throw in the show notes that you can see it for yourself. It looks very impressive. So,
and actually right now,
hang on.
That is what the highball glass looks like. It is a, gosh, let's go back here real quick. It does 8.4 ounces to 12.3 ounces. I'm sorry, 8.1 to 11.8 U.S. fluid ounces. So it, you know, that depends on the width of the glass, but it is a nice sized glass.
Okay.
Think of your standard glasses that you might purchase at a Target or something like that, or a Walmart or something like that. That would be, I think, what we're talking about there.
Okay. And have you guys seen the picture of the actual drink itself?
No.
Looks pretty impressive. I'm a little bit thirsty looking at it.
That island blue pucker looks like toilet water.
But holy cow.
It's intense toilet water.
It kind of reminds me of Toxic Avenger.
Yes, absolutely.
So there you go.
But there
and,
it is.
And you're going to need Lewis the Mop Boy the next day if you try to drink a few of those.
If you're watching us on video, live or after the fact, Brad has it up on the screen. Well, if you're watching us, you know that. If you're not watching us and you're listening, you want to check it out, you can check out our video on YouTube and see it for yourself.
Now, when I went to see Anessa in Texas, I made a sonic screwdriver using the orange cream slush and vodka and just doing that.
Okay. Yep. That makes complete sense. I like that.
From the Sonic restaurant.
Yeah. Okay.
An orange cream slush.
Yeah, it works. Definitely works. Okay. So creative, Brad.
I found it on the intertubes. I can't take credit for that.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay, so that's your geek drink of the week. If you got a party coming up, keep that drink in mind and impress all your Whovian friends. And especially, you maybe have a viewing party for this season premiere coming up. Might be a good thing to drink during the episode or during your party. So put your fez on, mix up your sonic screwdriver, and you're all set. You're all good to go. All right, final section of the podcast, our recommendations. These are sci-fi related things that we have watched, listened to, read, or played over the last week or so, or recently. And I'm going to go first, if you guys don't mind.
No, go ahead.
We talked about this actually on the last episode of the Sci-Fi Geeks Club, the long in gestation fan film Star Trek Renegades. It was supposed to be released in a couple of weeks. Well, they upped the release date to this week, and it's out now. So
nice.
Go check it out. It's on YouTube for free. You don't have to pay a single dime to watch it. And thank God for that. Okay, I'm going to back that up by saying there were some really good parts and there were some really bad parts. The visual effects, for the most part, were pretty good. There was a starship involved. I don't know what class of starship it was supposed to be. What was the Enterprise E class starship name? Do you guys know by chance? Probably not. I think it's supposed to be that class of starship. And it looked great from the outside, but the actual bridge set looked pretty dumb.
The Enterprise E was a Sovereign class.
Okay.
Starship.
I think it was supposed to be a Sovereign class starship. The captain of the Sovereign class starship was the guy who played Parker Lewis from Parker Lewis Can't Lose.
Or Corin Nemec.
Yeah. And he was great. He was really good. I was like, the cast they had for this, backing up a little bit, it was a crowd-funded fan film not authorized by Paramount or CBS. But it was made to pitch them a new series, the next Star Trek series. The pitch went well, apparently, but it wasn't picked up as an official TV show, so it's going online, and they're going to start producing an episode a month. So there's going to be, like, next year, there's going to be a new episode of Star Trek Renegades every month. Now, this initial pilot episode, which was an hour and a half, starred people like the guy who played Chekhov. Well, I can't think of his name.
Walter Koenig.
Walter Koenig was in it as Admiral Chekhov. You had Tim Russ, who played Tuvok, first seen on Star Trek Voyager. You had the guy that played Admiral Paris from Star Trek Voyager. He's a really famous actor, and I forget his name right now. Who else?
Wasn't Robert Picardo in it as the doctor?
Yeah, I was about to say that. Robert Picardo was playing Louis Zimmerman, not the actual doctor, not the holographic doctor, but the guy that created the holographic doctors from Star Trek. You had Icheb from Voyager, the Borg that was separated from the collective and became human. But he apparently his backstory in Star Trek Renegades is Section 31 got a hold of him and gave him back his Borg-like appliances, like, but they weren't always, they would just pop out from his skin, which I thought was kind of cool. Like, he could will them as weapons. So he could become as Borg as he wanted to or as human as he wanted to, which I thought was kind of cool. The effects were okay. The makeup was pretty awesome. The acting, depending on who you were getting, was sketchy because there was some great acting. Then there was like some newcomers that weren't as good as the other ones. Mm-hmm. And there was, for some reason, a lot of cleavage, which I don't think is necessary in Star Trek. I mean, you didn't see a whole lot of cleavage in Star Trek. Yeah, Counselor Troy, you would see it once in a while. But other than that, oh, in like Deep Space Nine, you had the Dabo girls who had a little cleavage. But it wasn't important to the plot, and I don't think cleavage is important to Star Trek in any way.
It wasn't until we got to Voyager and we started getting Seven of Nine and the cat suit all the time, and then they moved that over to Enterprise with the Vulcan fleet member on that. It seemed like then it became more of trying to add more sex appeal to Star Trek. It wasn't necessarily something, but the original series had some titillation to it.
Yeah, but it seemed like it was really unnecessary. Like, why? And then there was another part in this. One of the characters was wearing glasses, and I thought that we got beyond that. I know that Admiral Kirk wore them in Star Trek II: The Wrath of Khan, but only as like a decoration. Well, they were actually prescription.
He was allergic to the Retin A, I think it was the drug that they treated eyesight.
Okay.
You know, like fixed eyesight, he was allergic to it, so
okay.
He had to wear glasses.
It was just really weird to see a character wearing glasses full time. And then there was somebody that said "man," and I was like, "That's not Star Trek." Somebody says "man." So, okay, it's free. If you're a Star Trek fan, if you're a Trekkie, I think you'd enjoy it. But you will see, as I did, the weaknesses in the film. So, check it out. It's on YouTube. We'll put the link in the show notes. Star Trek Renegades. Okay, Corey, you want to go next?
Yeah, since I do a little show called Podcast of Terror, I thought I'd go and give us something with some horror flavor as a recommendation. The last time I was on Sci-Fi Geeks Club, I recommended a book by Molly Tanzer called Vermilion, which I just finished last week and I love, and I'm very upset that it's over. She did a short story that is being featured in the Nightmare magazine, and it's an online magazine that you can buy. You can subscribe and get it directly to your Kindle every month. So the magazine is called nightmare-magazine.com. It is a lot of horror fiction. They have horror podcasts that relate to storytelling. So if you download their podcast, you're actually getting stories. It's not just people talking about horror stuff. Mm-hmm. Although I hear that's good too. they have horror nonfiction. But since it is Sci-Fi Geeks Club, I thought I'd mention them also because they have a sister site called Lightspeed. and Lightspeed is more science fiction based. And the same sort of things. You get your stories that you can read in the magazine if you subscribe. You can see some of them on the site that they feature. And then they also have their sci-fi podcasts with featuring sci-fi stories. So it's a lot of great fiction by some really great authors. The Nightmare Magazine one, I believe, is Hugo nominated. And I would say give them a listen. Check them out.
Okay. Yeah, I've heard of Lightspeed.
Subscribing
before.
Monthly, I think, is only $1.99 if you have it directly downloaded to your Kindle.
Okay. I've heard of Lightspeed Magazine, definitely. Okay. Well, thanks for the recommendation, Corey. Brad, do you have anything?
You know, Aness and I have been watching The X-Files again, starting from season one, and I clocked out at about season five-ish, season six.
Oh, the first time around? When
yeah,
they were new.
So I'm going to watch it again and try to get through it all the way to the end.
So where are you guys at right now?
Gosh, right now we're kind of in the middle of season two, if I recall correctly. I think that we are at, I'm going to pull up a list here real quick of episodes.
Has the smoking man made an appearance yet?
Yes. We are at Humbug.
Okay.
Which, it's episode 20.
Is that a Christmas episode?
Mulder and Scully must find the paranormal among the abnormal when they are sent to investigate a long-standing series of ritualistic killings which match no known patterns, the latest of which is the death of the Alligator Man. It's the Circus Geeks episode.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, there's the guy that's you know, tattooed head to toe as in kind of an alligator or a reptile. So that's written by Darren Morgan, actually.
Okay.
So.
Cool. Yeah. So
originally aired in 1995.
So 30 years ago, right? 30? 20?
20.
20. I don't know my math, Jesus.
That's okay.
Okay.
This isn't a math podcast.
Thank
so
God for that. I would not make
I
a good host.
Miserably at math too.
All right, cool, Brad. And Sci-Fi Guy, do you have something as a recommendation?
Well, I'm still the new kid here, so I wasn't too sure what we were doing on this. But I do want to say, you were talking about Star Trek. Of course, you know I have snuck onto their set, too.
Oh, that's right. You mentioned that in your email. Yeah, let's talk about that.
Yeah, I snuck on Wrath of Khan when they were making it. I went through the Klingon ships. I went through sick bay. There was nobody. If you need lessons on how to get in secret places, it usually involves a clipboard. And if you want to take it up a step, you go to a secondhand store. You buy a walkie-talkie that looks as professional as possible. You don't need batteries. Doesn't need to work. You wear that. Nobody stops you. Anyway, Wrath of Khan, ended up finding myself on the bridge of the Enterprise nobody there.
Holy crap.
And so I went ahead, and without really thinking about it, I sat in the captain's chair, and I started playing with the little buttons. All of a sudden, everything turned red. Sirens went off. I must have hit red alert. And the whole thing was lighting up, and there was, and I'm just going, oh shit, it's kind of like a bad Seinfeld episode or something. And I'm going, I just broke the damn thing. And then I hear this laughing off stage. Apparently one of the special effects guys had been stalking me, and he actually hit it on because he knew I was in there.
That's so funny.
So the buttons actually did nothing.
But, so you got pumped by the special effects guy. Nice.
Yeah, and then he told me that the floor was really bad, and they were trying to change it because the women had to wear high-heeled shoes, or some of them, and they had these little holes in the floor, and women kept falling over when they were filming.
Oh, no.
And so anyway, so that was just off on the side. One of the many things I've snuck into. Statute of Limitations is over, so... As far as recommendations would be me. I don't sell anything. I don't promote anything except for cool people like you guys. So people should follow me and go to my favorites and retweet stuff. That way other people know, and then someday I get up to like 200,000 followers and I can sell the account for lots of money. And
I know so. I know for a fact that we got some more followers on the Galactic Netcast Twitter account because of you. So we appreciate
Thank you very much.
Yeah, appreciate the promotion. That's pretty cool.
Well, after we get the link to this, of course, I'll be putting it up, and hopefully we get some more onto your site.
And you made an image for your appearance on the podcast, which is awesome. You tweeted it out, and I'll put it in the show notes because it looks awesome. Good job, very good job.
Yeah, I've changed the avatar. I changed my avatar for whatever I'm doing. It's kind of the thing I do. So when I was doing the American Horror Story and I was working with them, they actually dressed me up as the clown. And they did that. Amazing they would pick me to do that.
Wow.
Twisty. And you know, they made the full mask, the whole thing, and sized it to me and had me go in for fitting and the whole ordeal. So
that's cool.
Fun things. So, and so I changed my avatar to his head, the twisty head. And for each different occasion I do, I make a different avatar. And so I made one for you guys with me on the radio. I wish we could have put it up here on the thing.
A second here, and I can share the screen so folks, if they are checking out, excuse me, the YouTube version, it's a gorgeous image of the the creature from the Black Lagoon in front of a classic radio mic that you might think of from movies that you see people talking on the radio or whatever. You know, kind of that looks like a large Tylenol capsule or something like that. And it's gorgeous.
Yeah, good job, man.
Yes, thank you very much. It's excellent. Beautiful.
Thank you.
I have a pre-recommendation. I have one more thing I want to mention. This week is the season finale of Dark Matter, and their guest star is Will Wheaton. So it's going to be really cool to see him back doing fictional TV and not just whatever else he was on.
He was on the last couple seasons of Eureka.
Yeah, Eureka. That's what I was trying to think of. Yeah. But it's been a while. It's been a few years. So it's going to be cool to see him back on TV again.
And it's good to see that his relationship with the Sci-Fi Channel is still going well.
Yeah.
Since his
canceling
his show last season, which was a good show, which was a lot of fun, but just only got the one season.
Didn't take. Yeah. All right, we have feedback. This comes from Jeff Cutshaw. He's actually the traffic manager at a group of radio stations in Knoxville, Tennessee. I didn't know that Midwest Communications owned stations in Knoxville.
Yes, Brad? We do.
Is that a new acquisition?
Yeah, we picked them up about 4 months ago.
Okay.
Something like that.
So this is Jeff. He says, if you want a better idea about Rhonda Rousey's acting, we talked about that on the last episode of the Sci-Fi Geeks Club. She was kind of campaigning to be Captain Marvel, Ms. Yep. Marvel. Then you should check out Expendables 3, where she had a fairly large part. And then Jeff said, I discovered your podcast from my coworker, Michael Red McMahon.
Ah, yes.
Do you know him?
Yes, I do. I actually talk to Red from time to time. I do kind of support work and answer questions on things. And Red's a really cool guy. And we had that. When you meet somebody new, you do something that I call the geek auction. And the geek auction can be two people who are knowledgeable or have a heavy interest in anything, be it cooking, not necessarily science fiction or anything like that. And you have a discussion between the two of you about this thing that you share a knowledge of, and you kind of have this escalation point where you are kind of trading references back and forth to see at what level you are geeks at and at what level you can continue to talk about a particular subject and how, you know, how knowledgeable you are of it. And Red and I had a little bit of that, and we were kind of surprised that we both, he made a reference to something and I made a counter reference, and then we kind of went back and forth in chat and realized that we were huge comic book and sci-fi nerds. So that was really kind of cool.
Yeah, and the reason that I'm sure Red was familiar and Michael was familiar, or Jeff was familiar with the show is because we put our podcasts on all the Midwest Communication websites.
Correct.
And how many stations are there now?
73. They're not on all of the stations. Some of the news talks opted out and yeah, stuff like that. But we're on at least 60 plus. 60, I'd say up to 63.
That's awesome. Cool. That's really cool. Yeah. So thanks for the feedback, guys, or Jeff. And thanks for the recommendation, Michael. Red, how do you say his last name? McMahon? McMahon?
McMahon.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, so if you want to leave us feedback, you can email galacticnetcasts@gmail.com, galacticnetcasts@gmail.com. You can call our voicemail number, which is 805-328-3966, 805-328-3966, or record a message directly through our website at gncasts.com, and we might be reading your feedback. Well, if you leave us feedback, we'll definitely be reading your feedback on the podcast itself. All right, that's going to do it for this episode of the Sci-Fi Geeks Club, and we want to thank the Sci-Fi Guy for being our guest this week. One more time, where can people find you on Twitter? What's your Twitter handle?
At FantasySCI.
Okay. At FantasySCI, and you tweet about what?
Anything that I think is interesting, which is usually sci-fi, but it can be weird traffic signs I see, anything that has a logic flaw, you know, why people get on planes instead of in them, you know, anything strange.
Logic flaw, I like that. I'm going to have to use that sometime. That's good
stuff. One of the I'm looking at Sci-Fi Guy's Twitter account right now, and he's got a picture of a skateboarding dog with a cigarette and booze with a, you know, it's a large no symbol. Here, hang on, just so that everybody has a full point of reference. If you are checking out the video right now, you can see one of these things that are on the Sci-Fi Guy's account, and I guess they have a problem with skateboarding, smoking, drinking dogs in that particular neck of the woods, and they need to put a stop to it. So,
well, you let one in, and then
and they wreck it for everybody.
Yeah, but I would want that dog, wouldn't you?
Oh, yeah, that's Spuds McKenzie right there.
Spuds McKenzie or Ted.
Yeah. So, again, you can follow Sci-Fi Guy at Fantasy Sci on Twitter. And thanks again for joining us.
Yes, thank you very much.
I'm trying to... Okay, there it is. All right, so I'm Dave Nelson on behalf of Brad, Corey, and Matt.
Bye, Dad.
We will talk to you guys next time.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thanks, Sci-Fi Guy.
Can we all swear now?
Thank you for joining us for another meeting of the Sci-Fi Geeks Club. Did you know you could help support this network financially for as little as $1 a month? Come on, that's less than a cup of coffee. Support this network now at patreon.com/galacticnetcasts. If you liked what you heard, then make sure to subscribe for free on iTunes, Stitcher, or by going to gncasts.com/subscribe. And if you really enjoyed the podcast, leave us a 5-star rating and review. Even better, tell your friends and family about the Sci-Fi Geeks Club from Galactic Netcasts.